Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider Podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. This podcast will be one of our 20 years, 20 Voices series, celebrating the upcoming 20th Airport Experience Conference. During these calls, we're talking with industry veterans who've overseen the evolutions of the concessions and customer experience over the last two decades and change. And today we're talking with Roddy McCullen, Chief Development Officer with W.H. Smith North America, which incorporates Marshall Retail Group and InMotion. Roddy, thanks for taking some time today.
Morning, Andy. No, it's great to be able to speak to you. I'm actually very humbled to be included within this 20 Voices in 20 years. So good to chat.
It's good to chat with you as well. I don't think anyone could argue that few have been around the block as much as you have over the last couple decades and change. What's keeping you busy these days? What's new on your end?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of things going on, Andy, in the industry. Obviously, supporting the development of the ongoing development of the business development team with Marshall Retail Group and InMotion together collectively, as you say, is WH Smith North America. We've seen some phenomenal growth in the last 5 to 6 years. Building on pre-COVID successes, we opened 49 stores in the last 12 months across our estate, and we won 47 new locations and retained a couple of existing spaces in the last 12 months. So, you know, frankly, for me, I couldn't be more proud of the team, the business development team. And we have something like close to 70 new stores, 70 new stores, to open in the next 24 months. I think from an industry perspective, as we've come out of COVID, there's just a plethora of opportunities for everybody out there, from the primes to ACDBEs to new entrants into the business. And that's an exciting element, I think, in the business overall. You know, we've seen some hiccups over the few years that I've been here in North America since just before year 2000. Obviously, some tragic events along the way, but the industry just comes back and very resilient, stronger every year with growth. And so when you look at the big opportunities that are in front of us, Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, JFK, et cetera, huge big RFP opportunities out there, as I said, for opportunities for all. And then we, you know, we also have our other business, very important, it's the legacy of the company, frankly, in the resort business. So new business opportunities in the resorts and also across rail. So we're in 48 airports today, 36 resorts, continue to grow that business. I've actually just taken on, from a personal point of view, I've just taken on more responsibility within the organization, facing into the challenges of all that exponential growth, frankly, managing the whole development process now from ideation at the beginning, creating and working with the BD team on all these proposals, winning our fair share of these proposals, and then designing, constructing, planning, and delivering of the new store opening process. So that's kind of like a new area for me. I'm transitioning into taking that greater responsibility as we move into the end of 2023. So very excited about 2024 and moving forward for the company and the industry.
I guess so. If you won 147 and opened 49, that's with my bad journalism math, almost 100 stores there put together. It's indicative that there is a lot going on right now. Is the industry pretty well back from the pandemic from your perspective? What do you what's the prognosis over the last couple of years and into the next couple of years?
I think, look, in general, it's been interesting, right? I mean, the business continues to develop and evolve over time. And, you know, coming out of COVID, I think, you know, there was still the clouded mist of how were we all going to deal with this? I think what they quote unquote has been the great resignation. I'm not quite sure that I totally agree with that philosophy and approach. But there's no doubt that, you know, challenges in and around labor and the staffing model, where people found other things to keep themselves busy during COVID, the hybrid working model, which works fine from an airport, from a head office perspective, but it doesn't really work at the operational level, right? I mean, you still have to be in the stores or restaurants to be open. I think that the severe incline in costs of capital has been a major challenge, I think, in general for the industry. The ability, though, to be able to sit down with our esteemed client portfolio and work through either extensions or financial relief, all of which has been gratefully received by the industry, looking at longer term deals as they come out in RFPs and the flexibility within the market. And I think probably a less nervous airport client market around longer term deals. And I say that because the quality of the competition and the quality of ultimately all the food and beverage and restaurants and retail stores has really been elevated over the last few years. And so I don't think that our client base should be too concerned that the tail's wagging the dog. That's not the case. I think the fact that there is quality competition out there maintains a level of standard, a high level of standard of operation and build-outs, et cetera. So that, you know, overall, the industry is improving itself in terms of its real estate and what's customer facing. I think, you know, the other challenges coming out of sort of like COVID, just in terms of being able to get our heads around what does this mean from a business point of view? What's the consumer demographic? What are they doing? What is the customer looking for? Clearly, the domestic passenger has come back in droves. I think we've got a high proportion of leisure passengers. I would say that the bleisure passengers, as we call them now, I love all these sort of like little acronyms and names we come up with. The business traveler is probably back for the most part, I think, domestically, but they maybe travel in a different way. So, you know, maybe the businessman or the businesswoman looks a lot more casual. So it's a little bit more difficult to distinguish between them and the leisure passenger. I think the very fact that people are going to different parts of the country and they might arrive on a Wednesday for a meeting, but then they actually stay through for the weekend. They may well have their family coming to join them to be able to do that. Because the ability, just as we're doing now, Andy, on a Zoom call, gives me much more flexibility about where I am and, you know, when I can work and when I can't work. Even if I'm going across the pond to sort of like visit family, et cetera, you can still be completely connected. So I think we have interesting dynamics going on in the industry. Mm-hmm. I know that we spoke to our client recently in LaGuardia, where we operate the sort of like the Bowery Bay shops, you know, 15,000 square feet of retail, very unique model. But their business passenger was normally somewhere in and around the 24 to 26% range. They believe that they're back at that already. So okay. I think it's interesting just to monitor that. The other challenge, of course, has been particularly on the West Coast, but on the coast with the international traffic and the impact of the kind of like the Asian economy and the Chinese impact, if you will, with a lack of passengers. But even that's now coming back as China has kind of like opened up. So once again, I think, you know, resilient industry, demand for travel, I think the future looks extremely bright.
Okay, that's great to hear. We got Roddy McCohen here today. He's the Chief Development Officer with WH Smith North America. WH Smith is made up of Marshall Retail Group and InMotion. Roddy, you've been in retail now for several years. You were in restauranting with Compass Group and SSP a number of years back. You're kind of in a unique spot to have seen both food and retail evolve over the years. What are some of the things you remember from, say, 20 years ago, and you know, what's the evolution looked like to you in those sectors?
Interesting, Andy. I started my career in airports back in in the 90s when I used to work for Burger King in Europe, and we opened up the first Burger Kings in European and Scandinavian airports, and then I did the same with Wendy's, which ultimately ended up actually with SSP being the old original SSP, if you will, Select Service Partners, as they were called, used to be part of SAS, the airline, actually, the Scandinavian airline. But they were our franchisee. And then, you know, I remember sitting in Oslo Airport as a Burger King representative going, wow, this is fascinating. And because the only experience I'd had before of an airport was like the vast majority of people, if you're fortunate enough to be able to afford to go on vacation, it's kind of like twice a year you went on a plane, once to go on holiday and once to come home. So to go in with a different lens on the industry was fascinating. And actually in my career, I kind of left when I was with Compass Group and SSP after I moved to the States just before year 2000, moved the family over. You sort of like you look back at those days, and I came out of airports for a little while and worked in education and healthcare within other Compass Group sectors. And with all due respect to my colleagues in those industries, it was just nowhere near as exciting and passionate and vibrant as the airport market. And I think if you look at what the industry's done and changed, I mean, I think when we first came out with SSP and basically won Toronto Airport, that was the first airport that SSP actually won in North America, and they're still there today. I think we at the time were trying to sort of like change the market by bringing heavy localization in. We had like Weber's from the highway just north of Toronto, which was a burger concept. And, we had other local concepts that we put into the airport, which was a complete change, I think, from the previous model that had been operating in North America, even to the point of offering a second city bar and grill, which was all themed around the second city, show and theater, of course, starting in Chicago, but they have a theater in Toronto. So doing things like that, I think we kind of felt that we could shake up the market a little bit and do things differently. Well, what a change now, right? What a change when you look at the overall industry. I think the sort of like the evolution of bespoke in-house concepts, where it was really all about burger, fries, a beer, and a coffee, if you could have called it coffee. And the industry has really evolved, to such a point where the customer expectations are really high. And there's nothing wrong with that. The industry in general outside airports from a food and beverage perspective is obviously grown and matured and developed. And now we have like really high-end quality restaurants and bars and airports, mix of national, international, local, regional, chef-inspired concepts. From looking at it through the WH Smith North America kind of like retail perspective in that lens, the move from what was like a simple newsstand with magazine headers and book headers everywhere and that was all about the sort of like the publishing market, and then what a big change of that through digitalization and the impact on the industry. And now we've moved from newsstands to these sort of like, well, we've got a 15,000 square foot retail space at LaGuardia, but that's sort of like almost like a one-off. But like our 5,200 square foot space that Cheryl this year had the vision for in San Francisco, and evolving the market to that size, no pun intended with our friends at Hudson there, by the way. But moving up to these marketplace style concepts that give the operator much more flexibility over term. We can follow the trends. We can really understand what the consumer is looking for. We can appeal to multiple demographics and multiple ages of consumer, something that we need to think about from the industry perspective as we move forward. And then the whole integration of technology. And, it's interesting, a number of RFPs that go out in the street talk about, what are you doing from an innovation point of view? What's going on from a technology perspective? And, I think the simple things are the things that we should do best, that we do best without overly confusing the consumer. So, but there is development. So, the integration of just walk out technology. How is the consumer accepting that? Where is the right location for that operation? Does the consumer in an airport and that demographic buy into it yet? I actually think the jury's still out in many ways because there is a physical barrier to entry. And, I think the customer's still trying to get their heads around that, especially when they're thinking about other things when they're in an airport, about like literally, where's my boarding pass? Where's my where's my cell phone? Because actually that's got my boarding pass. to like, where's my gate, But then there's other things that we're doing. So the integration of automated retail, the integration of self-service and, self-checkout, which is becoming much more acceptable to the wider generations, for anybody that goes supermarket shopping at the weekend, et cetera, and integrating that into the airport environment, And there's a generation, again, who are using their cell phones, and they actually don't want to communicate with anybody. They're quite happy. They're engaged on a cell phone. They're on a Teams call or a Zoom call, whatever it might be, while they're in there shopping. They just want to get their purchases, do the self-checkout, and walk out the door and carry on with their day. And that's fine. We, you know, as retailers, we have to be flexible and adaptable enough to be able to offer everything to the consumer, no matter who that consumer is and that age and that demographic. So
as the traveling public gets younger, maybe the fact that nobody wants to talk to anybody anymore helps mitigate some of the labor challenges that folks are having.
That's an interesting one. I think that's a bit of a misnomer in some ways.
But
actually, I think there's some people actually think that way. The just walk out technology piece. At the end of the day, you still have to have an ambassador at the gate, telling people or informing them about what is this, because the vast majority of people, frankly, don't know. I think there's probably some evidence out there that there's a greater acceptance on the coasts, where, you know, maybe somebody like Amazon have actually opened up their own stores on the coasts, and the consumer's a little bit more knowledgeable around how that technology works.
Okay.
Versus the vast swathe of the central areas of the country, where it's just not it's not a thing yet per se. But I think the labor side of it, coming back to that, you, as I said to people before, the product you might be able to walk in there as a customer using your credit card or palm technology, facial recognition, whatever that might be, and you can walk out with the product. But the product doesn't just walk in there in the first place. So you still have to stock the store. Sure. You still have to manage the inventory, and you still have to have areas of customer service, because there's always going to be a question. And then, of course, it doesn't impact management at all, because it's another location that we have to look after. So,
sure. Yep. You mentioned earlier that with the development that's taking place right now, a lot of different opportunities out there, that there's opportunities for primes, for ACDBEs, any companies of any size have opportunities to compete out there. But you also have mentioned the labor costs and the labor shortages and the development costs that go along with this. If development costs are impacting, even an SSP or a host or a WH Smith, how do you make the playing field level from that perspective? How do you keep, competition and opportunity for some of the smaller players out there, the ACDB players out there, viable in an industry that does have some barriers to entry?
That's a great question. I honestly believe that, there are still opportunities for all, but there are some severe barriers. I mean, I think the cost of money, for example, at the moment with high interest rates, is a challenge. It's a challenge across the board. It's a challenge for the big guys. I mean, we still all have to do the same thing. For the smaller operators, even medium-sized operators, I think it's a challenge in terms of looking at the return on their investment. So there's probably some sort of like flexibility that has to be shown in the business model, both from a client perspective as well as from an operator perspective. The cost of capital, the investment, okay, well, you can look at term. I think the protection on the downside about minimum annual guarantees going away, no minimum annual guarantees for the first year till the business gets up and running. All of these models are out there. I think, as always, though, you default back to the, if you know one airport, you know one airport, and each airport has its own philosophy. Each city has its own philosophy or airport authority in terms of the flexibility of what they can and what they can't do. And I actually think that, the more that we talk about the fact that there is not 101 cents in a dollar, and that you actually educate those that are making the decisions, those that are less focused perhaps commercially on the client side, and those that are less focused from a bureaucratic and political perspective on the concessionaire side, there needs to be those parties coming together and educating. And I think our industry consultants have a big role and a big responsibility to gather as much intelligence as they possibly can, to then to be able to feed the client base and our landlord base with information that's valid, that's up to date. None of us have a crystal ball. I mean, shoot, if we had a crystal ball, then we'd probably all be doing something else completely different. But I think at the end of the day, the education piece and an understanding and a sharing of information, Andy, you know, frankly, for every RFP that I think we've ever gone after, we have to share a pro forma of expectation. Hopefully, the lease agreement never comes out of the filing cabinet, but the pro forma and the information that was buried in there in terms of what assumptions were, I think that the industry would really benefit if that was to come back out, even if it's on a localized level. I'm not suggesting that we stand up or SSP stands up and, you know, shares its pro forma to the industry. But at the end of the day, you should be doing that on a one-to-one basis with your client when you're being successful. And it, you know, helps benefit the client for making future decisions. I think it's also a benefit to the partnership and the relationship. That if you're getting into a relationship together, literally for 7, 10, or up to 15 years, sure, you would want to communicate things with each other, wouldn't you?
Sure.
And we should be doing that as an industry, because I think ultimately we all learn and we all benefit from that. This is what I thought we were going to do. Here's what our assumptions were. This was based on your planning passenger level. This was based on the demographics information. Bring that all back full circle and then look at real life and what's actually happening. And I actually think that helps keep the industry a little bit more honest with itself, but it does keep people accountable. And, you know, there are three parties to this. There's the airport and their makeup, if you will, whether it's boards of supervisors or airport authorities, whatever that might be, or a city-run airport. And then there's the concessionaire, and then there's the airlines. And that last piece has always been the most difficult in terms of sort of like being transparent. But again, if it's on a localized level, I think it's not going to ultimately affect the sort of like the global airline industry from their perspective. But I do think that industry sharing of information would be hugely beneficial if we're going to try and continue to take this industry forward and learn the lessons, so that programs can be adapted for minority participation or smaller packages that might come out in larger airports to allow for new industry entrants as well as existing small and medium-sized operators.
Okay. Yeah, data sharing seems to be a big topic right now. We've been looking into that a little on our editorial fronts as well. Roddy McCullen, Chief Development Officer with WH Smith North America. I know that you said you don't have a crystal ball. I'm going to ask you to look into one anyway here. specialty retail and retail in general, but specialty particularly, is an evolving piece of the retail side of things right now in airports. What is the future for specialty retail in airports? How's that shake out? You know, I know you mentioned the marketplace concepts a few minutes ago. Yeah. You know, is that part of the specialty shakeout? What do you see going forward on that front?
I think so. You know, it's interesting. I think there's a number of there used to just be newsstand packages, and then as airports evolved and realized that they wanted to have some specialty retail in there, then, you know, nobody would bid on the specialty retail because nobody was quite sure. And the larger players at the time suddenly got themselves into a situation where the airports realized that was happening. And the airports would put out bids and RFPs for both news, now known as sort of like travel convenience, because that's even grown and developed itself as a market from the traditional newsstand to the travel convenience, carrying a much wider range of product. And they were tied in with specialty retail units as part of an RFP bid. And that still happens today. The challenge is that specialty retail, I think, is evolving out there in terms of how people can access product, whether that's, you know, online, digitally, they can check prices, you know, at a few clicks of the button on the telephone, which increases the consumer awareness. But the very fact that, you know, I could literally be on a flight, you know, like transcontinental, and something could be actually delivered to my house by the time I actually get there, sort of like puts a whole different perspective on what are we offering from a specialty retail perspective. I do think that there are categories that will continue to develop and be relevant on their own. You know, if you think about, you know, us within Motion, for example, and tech and accessories, You know, we have historically in the States been anywhere between like 500 and 1200 square feet for an InMotion tech and accessory store. You know, we've just opened up 330 new stores in the UK with InMotion over the last couple of years. And some of these footprints are up to like 5,000 square feet, which, you know, the integration of experiential, digitalization, software, hardware, et cetera. Now, I'm not suggesting we do that in North America, where the, you know, the business model is somewhat uniquely different. However, I think that this marketplace idea, where we can integrate many different facets of the business and many different product ranges, and for us, it's been great because, you know, we've done a great job in terms of like creating these unique retail experiences in around the marketplace, with a huge focus on localization. And, you know, reaching into the market, a lot of hard work going in to reach into the market for artisanal products that have a unique gifting. It's not the same yellow t-shirt, but there's always a place for that, if you will. But this localization in a larger footprint allows us greater flexibility. It allows us to bring in local artists and artisans to try and test their products. If they work, great. They become part of the permanent fixture, permanent merchandise. And allows us then to go out and look for more people in the market. So you continue to have flexibility, choice, and adaptation. And then over term, of course, right? So if we're looking at these longer terms, you know, the first challenge back from the client quite appropriately is, how are you going to keep this fresh then? So if you think about the number of individual boxes out there at like 500 square feet, 600, 700, 800 square feet, that's very difficult to keep fresh over a long period of time in a contract. And it might fail. And that you know, if that concept fails, you then get into this sort of like awkward spiral of, well, the airport wanted choice, we offered you choice, but frankly, we can now both see from a sales perspective the consumer's not buying it, whatever that might be. So you want to fail quickly, but then you have to think about this, the whole financial model that we talked to a little while ago. Mm-hmm. If you're spending sort of like north of $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 a square foot to build out a retail space, Andy, you know, that's a very difficult business model to suddenly sort of like transition again to make it something unique and convert the store into another brand or another concept. Even if you do it early enough in the term, I mean, you're sinking like vast amounts of capital into it. So that's why this market flexibility, if you will, allows us to do mini shop in shops, if you will, statements of product, having the best sellers that may well be mostly relevant to the traveling consumer. And, you know, you couple that with the integration, as I said, that we've done with massive focus on localization, then you get a real local flavor. You get something that's interesting to the regular passenger because the front of the store might look uniquely different every sort of like 3 or 4 weeks, 6 weeks. And that just attracts people to come into the store. They might not buy from that perspective, but they, you know, they'll be in the store and they'll be buying something else. So I think it's flexibility for the market. Like, ultimately, who's the customer? Because that's what the retailers are doing. We're trying to satisfy a customer need. So we need to understand who that consumer is, what their demographic is, who's the future customer. You know, the adaptation of just walk-out technology, you know, and I think the jury's still out on that. There is a generation that will absolutely appeal to. But there's another generation out there, which is the vast swathe of who's actually traveling today, where there's resistance. But the flexibility in the marketplace of being able to have different products, different opportunities, different service levels, I think that will continue to adapt. And then there's these hybrid packages that are coming out, and sort of like this blurring of the lines, if you will, as the statement goes, in terms of thinking about how does food and beverage integrate into that without necessarily competing against, you know, your standard restaurant and bar and fast food and fast casual dining options. What is the consumer looking for? And I think historically people get nervous about change. I remember when suddenly newsstands were allowed to carry bottles of water and the food and beverage guys were up in arms, you know, that was going to destroy the sales. Well, of course, that never happened. People just ended up buying more product, more water. It was just another point of sale, and sales overall continued to increase. Then the integration of grab and go, again, another concern from the food and beverage guys. But the food and beverage guys have done a good job at adapting, where they've also developed grab-and-go opportunities where the consumer doesn't want to sit in a restaurant. You know, remember during COVID, you didn't want to sit anywhere within 3 or 6 feet of somebody else. And you know, somebody still sneezes in an airport, I think there's still a little bit of a kind of panic goes on a little bit. So you have to be able to offer things to all consumers. And I just think that the industry will continue to develop. I don't have a crystal ball, back to the beginning of the question. But I think the flexibility and adaptability of everybody coming to the table and just being aware of what's happening in the market and sharing that education will be hugely beneficial as the industry develops.
Sure. Was that, you came through the Marshall Retail Group side, but when WH Smith got involved and you ended up with Marshall and with InMotion, what was the ability to create some of these flexible concepts in the marketplace? Was that part of the appeal of this move?
I think, obviously WH Smith, we're looking to re-enter the North American market. You know, they acquired InMotion back in October 2018 and then acquired Marshall Retail Group in December 19, and then the world changed. But by that point, I think, you know, we had already demonstrated that with some of these unique concepts that we had across the country, not the least of which District Market in San Francisco, and we had already won and been in development and in design and construction for the Bowery Bay shops and the Dean at LaGuardia. So I think WH Smith saw what we had done, saw what we had created, saw how successful we'd been in developing these types of locations and concepts. And frankly, you know, it's almost like a perfect marriage. InMotion had all the world's leading tech and accessories brand, right? Did a phenomenal job, still have a great reputation out there in terms of innovation, training, customer service, if you will, buying into the whole digitalization around that market now. Looking at Marshall Retail Group and originating as a destination retail company, creating solutions for our clients in the resort business and then growing into the airport business. And the sort of like some of the specialty retail and real focus on local and uniqueness, and the very fact that we weren't offering and are still not offering the same brand or concept when you look at the different news or travel convenience stores that we're doing, you know. And I think our creativity and innovation around that is a little bit second to none, if I can blow our own trumpet for a little bit. And of course, you know, the competition, you know, does what they do, and that just makes the industry better overall. And then W. Smith, with their vast experience on the travel convenience side across many different formats and locations, whether that's airport, rail, the highways in the UK, and predominantly taking those skills and learnings that W. A. Smith have learned, you know, over these centuries, actually, bringing that in, integrating that in with Marshall Retail Group's unique approach and the technology and of InMotion has been like almost perfect. You know, some challenges of integration, of course there are, predominantly probably more on the financial side of the business, where because we're a public limited company, so, you know, the different reporting, etc., that the organization has to get its head around. But, you know, W. Smith have been nothing other than terrifically supportive. Toby Keir, our new CEO, is built on the legacy that Michael Wilkins, our chairman of the board, left behind. Michael's still involved, just not in the day-to-day. But Toby brings vast experience from, you know, he operated over 600 stores in the UK, and, you know, he's come out and he's been out in the US now like 2 years almost, which is like flown by. Mm-hmm. And I've been with the company, actually celebrated 11 years of living in Las Vegas just this past weekend. And
is there any place to have a party to celebrate that kind of thing in Las Vegas?
Well, there might be a few quiet places that we don't tell the visitors about. Yeah. Well, and, you know, you talk about Vegas, just sort of like briefly off topic for a minute. Boy, does the city continue to evolve. You know, we have the Sphere, which is just an amazing experience. If anybody ever wants to come out and go to a concert with sort of like terrific acoustics and just a sort of like whole visual experience, which is second to none that I've ever been to. And then, you know, we're about to have Formula One in November here. So it's an interesting city, continues to develop, and, you know, sports continue to develop. And that offers us opportunities to look at different markets and different product ranges as well from a W.A. Smith perspective.
I was going to say Las Vegas has gone from with the gambling ties, it's gone from the city that nobody wanted to have anything to do with on the sports front to now, you'll have what, three of the four major sports before too long if baseball goes there,
that's right,
like Oakland is talking about. So yeah, interesting times for sure. Roddy, give me just a thought on, you know, something you have seen at an airport or an amenity somewhere, or a service that you think is a great addition to the concessions and services that airports offer that you'd like to see spread around a little bit more.
That's a good question. Actually, I thought that's a bit of a challenge, isn't it? I think you've got, and which is a social issue, a society issue, I think, where there's a much higher degree of general anxiety for individuals, no matter what genre they happen to be working in, just life in general. And then, of course, you just elevate that level of anxiety when you put people in an airport. You know, mm-hmm. we used to laugh and joke and say you could take the smartest people in the world and put them in an airport and they become like a bumbling idiot, right? Because like, where's my gate? Where's my boarding pass? Where's my passport, etc. And I think, you know, like elements that can take away the anxiety for people. So, you know, whether that's just simple things where certain airports, you know, have these, you know, like the dogs that you can pet on the way around, people doing, looking at yoga, people looking at sensory rooms. I think, you know, elements around that, around the design of terminals, the lighting and the mood help drop the levels of anxiety. And then you've got to go back to thinking about things. Well, how do we make it easy for people? Signage, the customer service element, the integration of all these choices of like in the retail world of automated retail, or, you know, just walk out or self checkout, or just a traditional face to face consumer experience where people just actually want to talk to somebody for a minute and keep them in a better mood. You know, we often used to say that we were the last people in the retail or the food and beverage world, we're the last people before people jump on the plane. And the airlines should be confident that we are actually trying to calm people down and not getting them overly anxious or overserved before they go on a flight. I think other, you know, areas of sort of like evolution that have taken place in airports, whether that's relaxation rooms, whether that happens to be something that people, the younger generation, are interested in doing, and gaming, for example, is, you know, is quite interesting. I think another, a bigger challenge for me, I think, to think about is the integration of the clubs and, you know, sponsored by banks or credit cards. And what does that do in terms of the model versus the traditional airline club versus trying to get sort of people into restaurants and retail stores to spend their money? That's probably more of a direct question to the food and beverage guys, because that's the direct competition. You know, you're taking people off the concourse, or in some of these clubs now, they're actually not taking people off the concourse. They're just standing in the concourse because they can't actually get into the club because it's so busy. And it's actually a worse experience potentially than it is actually being in a restaurant. So I think that's an interesting one for maybe for you to launch that question at my food and beverage peer group.
I like it. That's yeah, the lounges for sure. I mean, that's becoming a whole different world of its own in airports right now. So definitely we'll look into that. What about an amenity that you maybe see on the street that hasn't made it to airports yet? Anything you'd like to, you know, see added to airports that just hasn't quite made it there yet?
That's interesting. I think still elements around focus on an F&B perspective, at least around organic and sustainability, okay, you know, like farm to table, etc. We have a relationship in, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, our major focus is still retail, but, you know, we're in grab and go and we're in the coffee business. But we have a concept called Meal in Nashville, Tennessee, and in cooperation with Marty Emsch, who is the owner of the brand. She's one of our ACDB partners. Actually, she was a new ACDB partner we brought into the business. Always good to inject new blood, if you will, into the business and partner them up with more experienced ACDBEs, whole different topic. But her business model was basically kind of like from farm to table. So she has a small commissary. She's making a lot of great sort of like organic and sustainable products. And then we saw the benefit together of working and putting that into an airport environment. Now it's more expensive, right? So But I think the consumer's awareness is there if you tell the story effectively of what's going on. So you can have your standard sort of like sandwich, if you will, that you quick grab and go. You can have a better sandwich, you can have the best sandwich, and then you can have something that's completely uniquely different. And there's a cost element and a benefit that goes along with all side that and choices. What else do I see from a retail perspective on the street that, you know, coming into an airport? I think that's tougher. I think a lot of the retailers out there in the high street, if you will, are less is more. So there's, you know, there's a more experiential element going on in their stores, but less product because they've either got big storerooms at the back, etc., so they can pull the product when they like, or they're actually just marketing their product and you can buy it online. That's a very unique challenge in an airport environment. I mean. Always the old story about what about a shoe store? Yeah, what a great idea, but where am I going to put all the shoes? You know, because you have to cover all the shapes and all the colors and all the sizes. So I think there's a balance between us doing something experiential, you know, elements and pockets of experience that you can do within the bigger marketplace, because you can still build storage into the marketplace. You've got more flexibility there. So I think looking at experiential, maybe that helps to calm people down. It's an opportunity for a selfie moment, whatever these might be in airports on the retail world. Tough question, mate. Back to the old crystal ball.
That's
our job, right? That's the industry's job. It's going back to the shoe analogy. You know, that's why we have run out of pairs of shoes as developers, right? Because we're walking around trying to look for the next great thing. But it also has to be practical. Yeah. I'm all about telling my BD team, it's great to go and cause chaos in the market, right? Interrupt the market, change the market around. Paradies will be doing the same thing. Hudson will be trying to do the same thing too on the retail side and others as we try to disrupt each other and, you know, like beat each other up a little bit as we go after new business. And that's fine.
Yep.
We don't want to do is create chaos inside our own businesses. And, you know, like the more innovative we become and client facing, there is an actual impact back inside the business. And, you know, we have to be careful about that too. So.
Sure thing. Roddy McCohen, Chief Development Officer with WH Smith. Thank you for taking some time. I've asked the questions I've got. Is there anything you'd like to add?
That's an interesting one, Andy. Put me on the spot, right? I think for me, this industry has been like phenomenal in terms of for me personally. And to get to this stage here now, sort of like we did the last 20 years ago, like whoosh. And it's afforded me a very comfortable lifestyle. Do I work hard for it? Yes. But, you know, the industry creates the environment. And I think, you know, if I was on stage talking to my peer group at AXN, I would be saying, look, at the end of the day, each one of us earns a living of some degree from this industry. And our job as a collective industry is to be able to protect it, first of all, to continue to develop it together for the benefit of everybody in the industry, and to create a sustainable business model and career opportunities for those who are both in the industry today and for those that have no clue that this industry could afford to give you a career almost in any facet of life. You could be very hands-on and be in the electrical world. You could be a plumber all the way to being like a CEO, to being a chief legal officer or a vice president or a legal counsel. I mean, you can almost take every job out there and put it into an airport environment. And I think and believe that we need to do more as an industry that talks about that, even if it's on a city-by-city, airport-by-airport basis. To actually help educate the wider public about the opportunities that you can have for a long-term career in this industry. It's just awesome. So, and I love all the people I work with. I love all the people I interact with, including yourself, Andy, and the people at AXN. And I love the competition. And, you know, I think that's testament to both our organization and all the other organizations out there that elevate the standards of operations and quality across the industry.
The feeling's mutual, Roddy. I very much appreciate the interaction and you taking the time and fitting us in and doing doing the interview today. Good stuff. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Andy. Appreciate it.